Call the Senate Revenue Committee to order. As a subcommittee this morning, as our chair is tied up in Portland, we're going to open the meeting with a public hearing on Senate Bill 427.
Mr. Chair and member, Senate Bill 427 deals with the school equalization formula, and in particular the transportation grant component of that formula. What the bill is doing is to eliminate the current way of calculating the transportation grant, which is a percent of approved transportation costs. And in place of that, the bill would make the transportation the greater of two numbers. One is the prior year transportation grant for the school district, and two is the average transportation grant per student from the prior year, the statewide average, times the current year number of students measured by ADM for that school district. So the grant would be the higher of those two, starting out in the first year, and then in following years, those two calculations would be increased by 2%. Each year, and it would take effect July 1, 2005. The transportation data that we currently have would indicate that there would be about $15 million additional transportation grants in the first year. That then would come out of the general purpose grant portion of the formula. And in subsequent years, then there would be probably some reduction in the growth of the transportation grant because of the 2% factor.
Thank you. Senator Metzger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the audience. Representative Patty Smith and I introduced Senate Bill 427 with the idea that what can we do in very difficult times to aid our school districts, to provide flexibility for the dollars that we are providing those districts to meet the needs of their students. We all know that we have great needs in the public school system. We also hear often that if it wasn't for, quote, state requirements or limitations on the use of funds, that perhaps our district or our community may choose to use those funds differently or perhaps in a different way. So Senate Bill 427 is designed to provide flexibility to school districts. As you know, currently, transportation is a reimbursement at either 70, 80, or 90% of actual costs. And the issue here, as I see it, is that there really is no incentive to work at making significant reductions in the cost of transporting students if, in fact, you're going to be reimbursed the majority of those costs, because you just don't end up making the savings after all. On the other hand, if these dollars are taken from the school fund and given directly to the school district, then they understand that by making efficiencies in the system, they would then be able to not only meet their need, but they would also have additional dollars then to use in the classroom and for other needs that the district may find of value. A couple of things about 427, and Cindy Hunt, who drafted the legislation, is in the audience, so if anybody have any questions, would rely on Cindy for her evaluation of the drafting of the piece of legislation. But a couple of things I think are important with Senate Bill 427. Number one, Senate Bill 427, unlike some other concepts I understand that are floating around the building, Senate Bill 427 does not take away the mandate for transportation. That's, I think, the most important one. The mandate is still in. What it does is change the disbursement of funds from a reimbursement for actual cost to a straight grant to those school districts. So they can utilize those dollars. Now, you have a copy of the school finance distribution based on the runs based on 427. And I do know from my experience, Mr. Chair, with these issues, is that, everyone seems to support or oppose a piece of legislation based on that number on the far right-hand column. If it gives them more money, they like it, and if it doesn't, they don't. But there's two things that I think that are important here. Number one is, of course, these things can always be tweaked, to find any discrepancies in the system. We can certainly make changes in the runs. Number two, as we move forward, and as revenue staff pointed out, as we move forward, any reduction in the transportation grant quote, part of the money, simply goes to the regular distribution part. So it's still in the system anyway, and it's almost a matter of semantics as long as we, you know, have our ADMW, you know, correct. So the money is still there. It's just a matter of what we call it or what we don't call it. My position on this would be that if we gave school districts that flexibility, knowing that they would be able to use those dollars for other purposes in the school system while still meeting their same objectives, then this would be, I think, to the advantage of the state and certainly to the advantage of these school districts. So that is the fundamental basis for Senate Bill 427, providing flexibility to our districts. And again, if there's any tweaks in the formula, those are certainly easily adjustable. I asked Legislative Council about some of these numbers, because some are rather interesting. For example, Ben Lapine would get like another $500,000 under this formula. And as you research it, one of that reason is because they run a very efficient transportation system. So that if you go by ADMW, then, you know, they get actually more dollars because they've already been running a pretty efficient system. But in any case, there certainly is ways we can provide that. But I'll close, Mr. Chair, by saying that the fundamental question I think we need to ask is, we're providing the same dollars. These are the same dollars. We're not increasing the school fund. We're not decreasing the school fund. It's the same fund. The question is, when we give dollars for these local school districts, should those dollars be flexible to meet those same needs that we already have in statute, or should we dictate specifically how they're spent? I would advocate that we should make them as flexible as possible in difficult times so that school districts can maximize the value of those dollars to their students. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator. We have only two witnesses signed up at present, Ryan Reeder and Kent Hunsucker. Would you please come forward and let us hear from you?
Vice Chair Starr, members of the committee, my name is Brian Reeder. I'm the Director of Policy Research and Analysis Section at the Department of Education. I am here today to express the department's opposition to this bill as it is written. Having said that, I'd like to depart a little bit from my written testimony here and respond to Senator Metzger's description of the bill and his purposes for the bill. I want to say right at the top that the department wholeheartedly supports the intent of this bill. We agree with Senator Metzger that providing districts with a lump sum grant for transportation and allowing them to use that for other purposes if they run efficient transportation systems is a good idea, and that it does provide them with an incentive to run more efficient transportation systems, an incentive that they don't have now with a direct reimbursement of their expenditures. The part of the bill that the department disagrees with is converting the grant into one that's based strictly on the number of students that a district has. We know that districts vary tremendously in their transportation costs, and that those differences are based primarily on geography. What we observe out there is that sparsely populated areas of the state, which are primarily served by small school districts, have very high transportation costs. This bill, as written, will redistribute money away from those districts and give it to districts who currently spend less on their transportation costs, and we believe that defeats the original intent of the transportation grant, and that was to give additional resources to those districts who have very high transportation costs that are outside their control. Those districts are still going to have very high transportation costs that are outside their control, and this bill, as written, will, in my estimation, end up sucking money out of the classroom for those districts and leave them in worse condition than they are today. Having said that, we agree with the intent of the bill, and we think there is a way to amend this bill to provide the proper incentives for districts to be efficient in their transportation systems, but at the same time not hurt those districts that have very high transportation costs. And we're happy to work with the committee to to work on amendments that could make that happen.
Questions? Senator Prozanski.
Thank you, Mr. Reeder. I appreciate your candidness in getting this information out before us. Have you or anyone at the department start really looking at what are those other options of what we might be able to do in the sense of making amendments that would achieve the objectives that Senator Metzger has put forward with Representative Smith and ways that we can actually start trying to focus this into an area where those small school districts are not going to be adversely impacted?
Vice Chair Starr, Senator Prozanski, we have, and let me describe to you what I think the two viable approaches are. They each has advantages and disadvantages, and I'll just describe the two. The first would be to try and determine, based on district circumstances, which would be primarily district size and density of the school-age population that they transport, determine what it should cost them to operate an efficient transportation system.
Just when you say size and then density, size in the sense of population or size geographically?
Vice Chair Starr, Senator Prozanski, size primarily, well, actually both those things.
Okay. I just want to get this on the record.
Yeah, what we observe out there is that large districts in terms of student population that are fairly dense, and in Portland's a great example. It's a very large district, but the population is not sparsely spread out. It's quite dense, and they tend to have lower costs, transportation costs, than a geographically large but population small district that has to transport districts very long, transport students very long distances. So we would take into account both of those things, and in doing that, determine or estimate what it should cost for a district of those characteristics to operate an efficient transportation system, and then give them a grant based on that amount. And then if they can be more efficient, then they get to keep the money and use it for other things. If they're less efficient, they would have to pay that themselves. Now, obviously, it's a very difficult thing to try and determine what an efficient transportation should cost in the circumstances of 198 different school districts. That's the disadvantage. The alternative...
Excuse me. As you're answering his question, seems to me that there's a way to factor that by determining the miles traveled by student population. Having the student count, total count, the total miles driven, seems like it'd be relatively simple to come up with a formula that based on the mile per student that would be effective in accomplishing what you described.
Vice Chair Starr, theoretically it would be simple. I think in practice we run into some complicating factors. An example would be Portland, where they buy bus passes for some of their students. Portland also has a disproportionately large special education population that has unique transportation needs. So trying to factor in all those things makes it much more complicated. The department has started to do some work in trying to understand those factors that influence those costs, and we're happy to share that work with you and continue that work. But my concern is that if we put forward estimates of what it would cost for each district, those estimates for some districts will be much less than they're spending, and at that point we're going to have there'll be a great deal of disagreement on our hands about whether this approach is appropriate or not. The second approach, in some sense, solves that problem, and that approach would be to simply base a transportation grant on some past experience of the district, on what they're actually spending. So if a district were spending $2 million to run their transportation system in the prior year, then we would base their grant on that and then move that forward into the future in some sense. But again, not reimbursing their actual expenditures, but giving them a flat grant, and they can spend that money. If they become more efficient, then they can spend that money on other things, you know, more teachers, more dollars to the classroom. If they're less efficient, then they would have to pay that, those additional costs themselves. Now, the advantage of that is you avoid having to go through this exercise of estimating what an efficient system should look like in each district. You base it on past experience. The disadvantage is if there are inefficiencies in their past experience, you've built them in. So the question here is, what's the best approach? They both have advantages and disadvantages. One is much easier, much more politically palatable in some sense. The other, I believe, is more, it'll get us to a more efficient system a little more quickly, but it's also very difficult to implement and may face a lot of opposition. So really there's a choice there, my view, having looked at this, is that basing a grant on past experience probably gets you where you want to be, or most of the way to where you want to be, without requiring as much work and without creating as much disagreement about the appropriate levels as the other approach would.
Thank you, Senator Prezant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually like to see a blending based on what I'm hearing. It seems to me, and I think the chair actually brought up a perspective, it seems to me that you should be able to figure out geographically, we know what the size of the districts are, we know the routes that are being traveled or where they should be able to be provided, we should know what the mileage is, we should know what some of those factors that we can put across the board as to the cost of fuel. You know, all of the different variables that we have to put in there. It seems to me that you could do that and then use what their actual previous costs have been in the past as some type of gauge to see if it seems to be efficient and whether or not we need to take other things in consideration. I think, you know, the biggest issue I see is that when we look at this sheet, are these pages of the number of school districts that we have to be trying to develop this for, can that be done just during the middle of a session or not? But clearly it would seem that there are some ways that we can maybe start down that path and looking for how we, through an interim, be able to actually knock this out. I'm very conscious of what you've said. I just look at the two counties I have in my Senate district, and knowing the makeup of those school districts that are within there as to how diverse they are in size. Geographically, they're very large as compared to, like, my largest one, of course, being Eugene 4J, and then having part of Bethel and such. You have, I think, a good point as to the density is one thing, but you really have to try to balance it. But it just seems to me that if we... We're not going to get where I think Senator Metchner wants to go by just going on the actual cost of what has previously been accomplished, because it just basically build those things in, and how do you undo it? The other way is definitely much more time-consuming. And I guess maybe the question is, since the department's been looking at this, it sounds like maybe even before this bill came forward, what's your guesstimation of how much time it would take to actually start trying to build some type of a program and putting the facts down to give us that knowledge?
Vice Chair Starr, Senator Prezantsky, given the amount of work we've done so far and given that I believe we have most of the data that we would need to do, construct a well-specified model of this, I would think in 4 to 6 weeks we could generate some pretty good estimates.
Can I ask one other question, Mr.
Yes.
Chair? Equipment-wise, in the sense of what's actually being used for transportation, do you have access to that information as to whether they're relying on very old equipment or stuff that might be more fuel efficient, that type of stuff?
Vice Chair Starr, Senator Prezantsky, I do believe we have data on the number of buses, the capacity of each bus, in other words, the size of each bus, how many students it will carry, and when that bus was purchased.
Okay.
So we do have that sort of data, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Metzger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Reeder, for your testimony and your thoughts on this, because I think we're all trying to get to the same objective. And, one thought I had on this, because certainly the concerns that you had would be the same concerns I would have, and as trying to make this so we meet the objective without the unintended consequences, and I believe there are some ways to get there, one of which may be to consider we have the 70, 80, and 90% reimbursement ranges, and those are designed because of those high transportation costs. And one suggestion may be to incorporate that same formulation that we use to determine the 80% districts and the 90% districts and weight them, give them an added weighting, which is why they're reimbursed at a higher rate because of their higher cost, and then be able to bring that in closer to trying to meet some of those goals. That's just one thought, using that same methodology. Or as staff was discussing, the possibility of grouping those school districts together that have high transportation costs because of district, and be able then to take a similar districts and look at providing a mean cost for those, which would you'd have the efficient ones and the inefficient ones, but they're doing basically the same challenges, and that would be challenging those who are inefficient and moving them into an efficiency category, and without detracting from those that have been. Just a couple of suggestions as you think of methodologies to bring this closer into balance to meet the overall objective, and that would be appreciated.
Vice Chair Starr, Senator Metzger, I think that what you've just described is consistent with the way I've thought about it. The key here is, as you well understand, making sure that any savings they generate, they get to keep. And so the method we use to determine how much we ought to give them, there are a lot of options. And the weighting scheme is one. Categories of based on their circumstances is another one, so certainly we can explore those.
Thank you. Mr. Hunsaker.
My name is Kent Hunsaker, and I'm the Executive Director for the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators, and appreciate the opportunity to speak to you, Vice Chair Starr, and members of the committee. The transportation bill is one that we have what is called the OASE Steering Committee of the Funding Coalition, which is 40 superintendents. We asked them to review this bill and give us some feedback about what they saw as their concerns. And I think we have to go back and look at what the current 70-80-90 does. We have districts that vary in cost from $1,200 a student, very small districts over in Eastern Oregon, to the $200 to $300 a student range. The 70% is for those districts that are in the lower range, and the 80% and 90% goes all the way up to those that would provide $1,200 a student. And when you think about that, 90% of $1,200 is $10,080, and that means that district is paying $120 itself. 70% of $200 would be $140, and that district would be paying $60 a kid itself. It's a way to equalize that. One of the current concerns that the members of the steering committee expressed about this is that if you don't change any of the inputs, in other words, you still mandate transportation, you still require that students are transported within the mileage limits. We have fuel costs and the fixed costs of salaries and benefits for those employees, fuel costs, the whole issue of upgrading a fleet of buses, all those are kind of fixed. So the question is how do you encourage savings in the system without changing any of the inputs? If you look at the growth of transportation over time, it's similar to other parts of growth. So it's not like it's grown out of control. So the general feeling is that if you go to another system, you have to look at what that system would eventually do. And we believe that the way this bill is written, that it would end up punishing very small, high-cost districts over time, because their costs are going to raise higher, and under this they would be fixed at 2%. And over time, they would end up getting less transportation reimbursement when they have no flexibility to really go out. One thing that has not been brought up, however, is if you were to look at the districts on there that have low costs, I believe there will be a strong correlation between those districts that contract out their transportation and those that don't. And it could be that is the one way that you do that to save is to contract out those costs. But there are people in this room, including me, that say, watch out for that, because that's a whole different issue. But if you're really going to save money, there's only one way to do that, and that is to look at the areas that are the highest costs, which are salaries and benefits. And like I say, if you want to look at your list, there'll be a very high correlation between those districts that contract out and those that don't. I'd end up with another statement that as you look at possibilities, what you're looking for is an incentive for districts to save in transportation costs. As you look at that, I'm saying that this doesn't provide it, and over time it will separate your districts into those that are getting most of their transportation back and those that are not. The one possibility for providing that incentive is to leave the system the way it is. This is my own opinion. I haven't even run it by our committee, but to leave it the way it is and then provide those folks that are able to save money with some incentive. In other words, they would get, the first year they would get all of the money that they saved. The second year they would get 80% of it. The third year they would get 50% of it. And over time, anyway, that there would be some incentive for somebody to go out there and really decrease their costs. So you could set that up, leave the system the way it is now, but provide some monetary incentive for any district that would be able to decrease their costs. like I say, the funding coalition just believes that as you look at this bill, if you have not changed any of the inputs into it, the mandate, the mileage requirement, all the fixed costs that are fit there, that you districts really don't have the opportunity to save money under this bill.
Thank you. Questions? Senator Metzger.
Yeah, thank you for your testimony. Your last comment is interesting, because you say they don't have the opportunity, and I'm looking at the school districts as a whole, not any individual one. I think in our conversation, and obviously you were sitting there hearing our conversation dialogue with Mr. Reeder, that some of the issues you addressed, you know, could be taken care of when you talk about some of those high-cost districts. That's, you know, part of the dialogue we had. And, but on your last comment, that when you said that they would be unable to reduce costs, you know, I question that just on its face, because that is saying it's prima facie that we're running, that all these districts are running very efficient transportation systems. And you can tell by the numbers of light districts that there's some reason for that. That's not the same. And your suggestion about leaving it as it is, but providing an incentive for the reduced cost, I don't see how that would happen, how that could happen, if we left that as it is, because the way as it is, it's a reimbursement. So how can you get a refund if it's a reimbursement? I mean, there's no, there would be no incentive there, because it is strictly approved costs, and you get your 70 or your 80 or 90%. And if you reduce your costs, you get a lower reimbursement. So I don't understand how that would work.
Senator Starr and Senator Metzger, the way it would work in my mind would be, let's just take a district and assume that they get $1 million in reimbursement, and that district, that you could apply some type of inflation factor if you wanted to be 2% or something like that, that they would be guaranteed that they would get $1 million plus 2% for the next year. If that district was able to save money, then they would get the difference between that million and their 2% increase and the money they saved. The other option they would have would not to be do anything and be in the 70, 80, 90 range. So what it doesn't do what you're talking about and set everybody on a timeline of this is the way it is. You say that there are efficient systems out there, and it could be that a very efficient system would be one of these ones over in Eastern Oregon that's paying $1,200 a kid. But over time, they would lose under this bill. Is our belief that over time, growing 2%, that they would lose, and eventually they would come down to an ADMW reimbursement, which would, as we know, would hurt them very badly. So, I mean, that's the way it would work in my mind, is that you know what you got last year. There's some type of increase to that. If you save money, then you get a certain portion of it.
Further questions? Thank you very much. It's been an interesting discussion. We have Trish Smith wants to talk to us about this bill. Is there anyone else that would like to testify?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tricia Smith. I represent Oregon School Employees Association, which is a public sector union representing educators in many educational settings around Oregon, including student transportation providers, bus drivers. And I am here at this point in opposition to Senate Bill 427 the way it is written. And as I begin to tell you why we feel that way, let me first say that we very much appreciate the sponsors keeping the mandate as it is in the statutes. The transportation mandate is, in our opinion, a critical piece to the education of children in Oregon. In today's world, parents don't have the opportunity to provide transportation to children to school because they're at work long before their kids are at school, or in my case, they're at work. Their kids are going to school at times when I cannot provide that transportation to them. The more rural, the more poor those parents are, the more that is the case. The transportation mandate, if we are going to have compulsory education for students, is a critical part of our education system, and we appreciate that it remains in this bill, unchanged. The next issue I'd like to talk about, though, is inefficiencies and how one might get at inefficiencies and why the transportation funding formula is as it is. When it was first established, it came as a result, the funding formula came as a result of the mandate. School district said, if you're going to require us to transport students, then you have an obligation to provide us a reimbursement and share in the cost of that transportation, because otherwise you're taking money out of classrooms to do it. It was post Measure 5, there was just no way. The legislature agreed that when it was going to require something of school districts, it should bear portion of the burden of that cost, and that's why the transportation mandate included funding from the state. The reason it was a reimbursement formula is because transportation, to a large degree, is a cost that is beyond the control of the district. The district can't decide where students live within that district. It can't decide when they move within that district. It can't decide how much fuel costs or how much buses cost. It has a lot to do with how much bus drivers cost. I'll get to that in a minute. So those costs are pretty much out of their control. Some are fixed, some are wildly fluctuating, as our fuel prices are right now. And so when the legislature considered all of those factors, they decided it was more prudent to provide the district reimbursement for transportation costs so that that could account for those wildly fluctuating factors and not penalize a district when gas prices skyrocket or when kids move around and the bus routes have to change dramatically as a result. So that's why reimbursement was the choice of the legislature at the time. The mandate has been modified over time to account, or I'm sorry, the funding formula has been mandated over time to account for the fact that there are different transportation costs in different kinds of districts. As has been mentioned, Portland has a very different situation than Crook County, for example. And those differences were built into the reimbursement formula. So that's why we've got what we've got. And our system is still the same. Those issues still exist. And those reasons to have a reimbursement formula and a transportation mandate still exist, in our opinion. On to inefficiencies. My members really get frustrated with inefficiencies, too. We get that. They sit in those bus barns, and they see inefficiencies, just as you do from your position. And they'd love to help you with them as well. They don't consider themselves inefficiencies, however. And they don't consider their health care plan an inefficiency. So if you're looking at whether or not the management of the school district is operating the transportation program efficiently, that's a good thing. They want you to do that. We suggest one of the ways to do that is in the existing language of the bill. The department has the opportunity to approve transportation costs. They reimburse approved transportation costs. I think the department should have the opportunity to determine whether or not transportation costs are appropriate before they approve them and not just handle a straight reimbursement. One of the ways to do that might be to look at another bill that's here in the Senate this session. That's Senate Bill 156. It allows the Secretary of State to build a state school fund for audits, performance audits, in school districts on programs exactly like we're talking about here. The department talked about the difficulty in figuring out a different funding formula. I don't think you need a different funding formula. I think you need to know where they are wasting money and billing the state for more money than they should. The way to find that out is in a performance audit. Senate Bill 156 would allow performance audits that don't that aren't billed directly to the district that is audited, and instead districts share in the costs of those audits, which can be very expensive. You could pass Senate Bill 156 with a directive that they look at the transportation system first and determine what a model transportation system is in a variety of situations, and then you could build an idea of whether or not districts are wasting money or are spending it as efficiently as they can. I think that is a far better idea than telling districts that you agree that contracting out is efficient. Contracting out bus service is not efficient. You're trading professional bus drivers that are career employees, and you may not know. Some of you have served on transportation committees and other committees do know. School bus drivers have to go through a variety of training and testing and certification before they can be bus drivers. If you reduce their benefits to that of a Starbucks worker or a McDonald's worker, you're going to have more trouble than you do now to find bus drivers. And it's difficult to find bus drivers. Most school districts have difficulty filling those positions because the testing is difficult, it has a lot of cost involved in it, and it's a hard job. Bus drivers get up real early in the morning and transport kids, and then they don't have anything to do until the afternoon. It's hard to get another job in the middle of the day. So there are unique situations that would cause me, if I were a policymaker, to want to make that environment positive as a way to attract quality people to these jobs. I cannot imagine trying to drive a vehicle on a mountain road with 50 kids behind me in the same room. For 30 years, it's just beyond my comprehension. But we have people who do that every day, and we need them there. This bill should not be about them, and I wasn't going to bring that up until contracting out became the way to save money. So I suggest you look at the existing language. You look at Senate Bill 156, give the Secretary of State the audit, the performance audit power that they need to go in and find out how to make transportation programs efficient and provide that model to us and to the department, and then give them the opportunity to reimburse approved transportation costs, that is, those that are appropriate. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Questions? Senator Metzger.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. A couple of things. Your point, I think, is very good about the efficiencies where they may be elsewhere. And you and I have talked before about this bill. Of course, the design of that legislation is kind of a risk-reward type of incentive, and that is if you have flexibility in the dollars, that some of these inefficiencies that maybe some of your members know about, that they will all of a sudden take notice of, because they can realize they can use those dollars more efficiently, and right now they don't see the reason for it. I mean, I think that's kind of the purpose of this. But I would just be very curious, from your expertise of working with your members, if you could maybe cite just a couple of examples of inefficiencies. When you talk about the bus barn inefficiencies, I would be very, very curious about some of the ones that your folks have observed in the transportation system.
Well, first, Mr. Chair, Senator Metzger, first let me say that I've not done any research that I would want to describe. What I have are the conversations that members provide to me when we're talking. The one that comes up most is, how many people does it take to run the transportation program here? We don't have enough bus drivers, but we sure got enough people telling us how to run the buses. So that's their most... Now, I don't know what to make of that, because I think I've got a lot of bosses, too. So maybe that's just that everybody thinks they have too many bosses, but maybe they have too many bosses. I don't know that there is a lot of waste in the way they design routes. Bus drivers and transportation managers don't see scenic routes as an alternative. So, it's not the cost of the bus, it's not the cost of the driver, it's not the cost of the route. I'd look at the management of the program. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Further questions?
Thank you.
Thank you very much. There's no one else that wishes to testify. We're going to close the hearing on Senate Bill 427, and we're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 718.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 718, we've seen at the 9th of this month. Just to refresh your memory about what the bill does, it tries to instill into the system of the Oregon Investment Council the declaration of conflict of interest and puts a timeline on that declaration, when it needs to be, and the bill itself talks about one business day to be the standard, and then instates penalties for the time that is beyond that time, when it talks about $1,000 in violation penalties for that issue. In the same time, I think we talked about Senate Bill 994 in conjunction with Senate Bill 718, because it was talking about the same issue. However, since then, I think there has been discussions between Senator Walker and the State Treasurer about how to handle these issues and amend Senate Bill 718 to include the different requirements of discussions that others think is important. And in front of you, you will find the Dash 1 Amendment, and the Dash 1 Amendment basically extends that one business day into a three business day type of arrangement. and reduces the penalty from $1,000 to $250. That was part of the discussions that we had last time, is whether those penalties are too high and too expensive for the volunteers of that council, and where the realistic demands of the timing, and as we talked about the email and fax and so on. So that's where we are at this amendment, and that's about it.
We've thank you for that introduction. I think it's appropriate that we have a sponsor and the treasurer's office come up, Kate, and
see if
Senator Walker, and see if there's peace in the House.
I guess it's a friend.
Oh.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Vicki Walker, State Senator, District 7. Yes, there are no black eyes and no scruff knees. We came to terms on this. I met with the chair of the committee, Senator Deckert, and then I talked with Ms. Richardson, and we came to agreement. I'm willing to give up on the one business day and make that three business days, and she's willing to retain a fine of up to $250 rather than $1,000. So I actually came down quite a bit, but we still want a little bit of a fine in there, and that is the maximum fine. The Government Standards and Practices Commission always has its discretion to administer a fine, much less than that or none at all. So that's really just the maximum.
And for the record, Kate Richardson, State Treasurer's Office. The only, as Senator Walker articulated, we did agree on this, and we've acquiesced to leave a penalty in, and we're pleased that it would be reduced from what the penalty would be for failing to disclose an actual conflict of interest. We would just like to reiterate that this goes to declaring a conflict or potential conflict of interest that is likely to occur in the future, not one that is existing at this time. That provision is already in law, and there is a penalty associated with that.
Thank you. Questions? Senator George.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to oppose Dash 1 amendments, and I read, when I read the bill for the first time, I thought, $1,000, that would be $10,000. Because, you know, we've seen some things that just have a really bad aroma about them, and I think it needs to be a really serious threat. I was in a committee yesterday in which we had a bill that was going to place a $25,000 fine on an employer who made a mistake. And yet, we can't even get a $1,000 fine on somebody who may be dealing with hundreds of millions of dollars. So I'll support the bill, but I'll be a no vote on the amendments.
Mr. Chair, may I respond?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator George. This is a fine imposed for a potential knowledge that you may have a conflict of interest. It does not change the amount of the fine for the actual conflict of interest. So the potential, the knowledge that you might have a potential conflict of interest is, I thought, was a lesser deserving penalty than actually having a conflict of interest. And actually knowing about it. This is thinking you may have one. So it's a little further removed.
Thanks very much.
Appreciate that explanation. Any other questions?
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 718.
Senator Metzger has moved the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 718. Further discussion? Senator George, you still opposed?
No, I'm okay.
Okay. No opposition. So moved.
There's the kumbaya here in the Senate.
Senator yeah. Starr, I move Senate Bill 718 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Metzger has moved Senate Bill 718 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Discussion. Any opposition? Hearing none. So ordered. Senator Walker.
Would you like me to carry that bill, Mr. Chairman?
I would like for you to carry that bill.
Thank you. I'd be delighted to.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for the hearing.
With that, we close our work session on Senate Bill 718, and we're in adjournment.